how would you explain CUP as a process in general? And how would you respond to people that say, hey, 30 years has passed. Do you feel you've actually done something?
If you think about the Paris Agreement, where you convened so many countries and federal governments, and they decided to be in a binding arrangement whereby they need to deliver what they agreed there on consensus, because this is not a majority-minority voting, it's a consensus building. And most probably, if we haven't done what we did throughout the COP cycles, temperature would be much higher, solutions would be much less advanced. This is a global problem. If we don't address all of it together, you leak and you don't get the results.
Welcome to Sustainability Wire, the show that plugs into the thinking that moves sustainable finance. I'm Lorenzo Sa, the Chief Sustainability Officer at Clarity AI, and I'm delighted to have today Dan Yoshpe on the show. He's the high-level champion from climate and at COP30, and he brings really a track record that is incredible in terms of both climate advocacy as well as sustainability strategy. And what I really like to do today is cover a few topics with Dan. One is, what is COP? The other is, what should we expect from COP30 specifically? The third is specific for investors. What should they expect and how can they get involved? And then really look at how tech and AI may be involved in achieving or challenging the achievements of COP30. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, now look, we're very excited and we're keen to start with maybe a little bit of your background. What got you to sustainability and climate? And maybe more specifically, what is the high-level climate champions and how did you get selected as the high-level climate champion for this COP30?
Well, I'm an industry person. I spent most of my career in an automotive company founded by my family more than 100 years ago. I've been the CEO there and I'm currently the chairman of the board. Spent around 40 years of my life working there. And I also serve on different boards from sort of transportation-related companies, Embraer, Marco Polo, and VEG, which is a electric power company. I think my connection is from the business side, recognizing that there was a transition going on for many, many years. A lot of technologies arising and solutions and opportunities that were making a lot of sense for what I call this sustainable socioeconomic development path, whereby we can think about a continuous growing economy, taking care of sustainability, taking care of social. And of course, those who are in the forefront of this tend to be in a better position than those that are not. So my early connection with this really comes from the business side. As I moved off from my CEO position around 11 years ago, I had the chance also to serve in some institutional roles. And last year, Brazil was heading the G20 here in Brazil. And the G20 has this chapter of business called B20. And I was the leader of the B20 in Brazil last year, and probably that's my opinion, that's what called the attention of the Brazilian government and the Brazilian presidency of COP30 to invite me for this role, where there were a lot of very well-prepared people. But I think also maybe the presidency and government wanted this blend of a strong business background to have a strong communication also with the business community and this previous role at B20.
Yeah, it looks like that role at the B20 was quite important. And it's interesting, your transportation experience is quite linked to getting to COP and to the sustainability challenges within the transport world.
The high-level champion, most of all, more than anything else, it's a team. There is the champion, which the presidency of each year's country has this right to name, but there is a team of more than 80 people very much specialized in all kinds of solutions and of all kinds of subjects related to climate change and to the climate action agenda, spread around the world, connected to all of the entities of the climate arena, with a long experience on each of these matters. So these guys, they're really doing a significant work to connect the non-governmental society with the government directions and regulations to achieve the Paris Agreement objectives, which is sort of the overall objective of this. And COP, for me, is a cycle. You have almost every year a COP, unless you have some COVID or some very hard circumstance, and many events in between the COPs. So you have a full calendar. So it's a cycle where you can really move forward very important agendas, very important themes, either on the negotiation front, as was mostly in the past, and probably from now on, mostly in the action agenda, in the implementation front. So it's a huge headlight, a lot of attention. How can we use that for the benefit of the process?
One thing is that there's like 80 champions, which is great. There's a lot of energy that you lead. I think what's interesting for me is also that the champions are really looking at the non-state actors. Is it correct that you guys really are bringing everybody else but the parties to the table?
Yeah, including the municipalities, the state government. So whatever is not federal government, we are trying to talk to them all the time. And by the way, just in addition to this 80 great people and the team of the champions, the Brazilian presidency also nominated 30 special envoys that work in parallel to us, but very much together in trying to achieve the objective. So this is such an amazing story, the climate action agenda, in my view, that the more people we have showing, talking about, and connecting because of the size of this audience, as you correctly pointed out, is very important.
COP stands for, you know, Conference of the Parties, and we're 1 month away, and it's been going on, though, for 30 years. So that's a long time. And so how would you explain COP as a process in general? And how would you respond to people that say, hey, 30 years has passed. Do you feel you've actually done something as an exercise?
Personally, I was not from the beginning at COPs, but I really believe that a lot was done. If you think about the Paris Agreement, where you convened so many countries and federal governments, and they decided to be in a binding arrangement whereby they need to deliver what they agreed there, on consensus, because this is not a majority-minority voting, is a consensus building. So this is amazing only by itself. And most probably, if we haven't done what we did throughout the COP cycles, temperature would be much higher, solutions would be much less advanced, and this connection of regulation, legislation with what we need to do would be behind as well. If you think about carbon credit, which is a very sophisticated theme, and I think I like this one because to your question, we are not there yet. There is still a lot to be done on the negotiation, on the legislation, on the implementation front. If you don't have the cycles, it's very hard to get these things going on a global perspective. You could get in one region or another, but this is a global problem. If we don't address all of it together, you leak and you don't get the results. So personally, I think it was a very important decision, but you need to recognize that it's not simple, it's not an easy process, and maybe 30 years for this matter was a short period of time. Hopefully, we are moving now to a cycle with a lot of implementation, because so much has been built before us that makes our life easier on the implementation front. But even then, when people tell me about COP30, I said, again, this is a cycle. So do not expect COP30 to be a solution in itself. It's just a part of the puzzle. And then next year we go to the next COP and so forth. And we keep working on these solutions every other day. That's what could really make a significant difference.
Yeah, so let's go to COP30. the specifics. No, it's a COP that comes at a time where geopolitics have kind of really changed. The ESG backlash, the sustainability backlash in the US and in other markets have actually scared some investors off. There's this $1.3 trillion need of funding that is being asked when I think a lot of governments feel a bit broke. And I think most countries have still not really delivered the national determined contributions, the NDCs. So as a group of investors and our listeners are investors, you know, what should we, and I understand that not everything happens at the COP. So I think that's a really good clarification. But what should investors expect from this COP and what should they not expect from this specific COP?
Well, I think, again, to the previous point and mixing here, there's a lot of things going on, of course, because everything is so dynamic. Sometimes you get a bit lost. But if you look, for instance, at renewables, solar, now you look at China at this exact moment and they're putting more renewable energy on the ground than all of the rest of the world on a specific day. Then you look to electric vehicles and you say, okay, it could be more. But you transformed a historical industry in very few years, and this is ramping up either on hybrid ways or pure electric vehicles and other ways of decarbonizing, which, honestly, I'm an industry guy in automotive. 20 years ago, this was an unknown territory in the sense of how to get it done. Then you talk to the airway side, where I'm a board member of a plane maker company, and the route, which was not very clear again 10 years ago, now seems to be very clear. Now you have an issue of economics, offtake agreements, and COP cycles are very good for that, to sit around the table and to get those things organized. Then you look at maritime and you have a similar situation. You look at green steel again, you look at cement, and I could continue here to list you many other stories. And then you start make the accounting and say, okay, minus 6 percentage points of GHG, minus 8, minus 5. You know, then you start to get optimistic. But to that previous point, does this end at COPX? No, it's a continuous effort. And we know what we know by now. But there is a lot to get done, to get implemented, and to get the benefit of that. Of course, clock is ticking, right? And we don't have all the time of the world.
I mean, these examples have been a lot about businesses. Are you arguing that it's not about putting in new frameworks? It's more about getting the business, putting the money where it's needed?
Not only the business, because I gave you some business examples, but if we go to waste management, which is traditionally a municipality or a local government story in most of countries. If you look at access to energy, you have 600 million people in Africa without access. If you look at the clean cooking subject again in Africa, 900 million people cooking in a way that is bad for health and bad for the environment. Some of these things are not only business or even business itself. So again, we need to work with all. Adaptation is a front where it's, again, an amazing business opportunity as well. But adaptation needs a lot of organization on the municipal side, on the state level side. Early warning systems is a very good example. And there you go. On the financing front, I think you correctly pointed out a challenging issue about the amount. So how can we go from the 300 billion to the 1.3 trillion? So Brazil and COP29, COP30, they will deliver a roadmap now in Belém. But of course, a roadmap is a roadmap. Then we need to make it happen. But if you look at COP30, TFFF, new very interesting proposition, not so new, maybe 2-3 year old of work, but becoming mature now, amazing proposition to get forests to a new level, and especially the communities around the forest to a new level. And that's interesting because that's very much a combination of sovereign funds, government, private, philanthropies. You have everybody in there because you need to get to a very sizable amount of money because you're working over the spread. It's a very interesting architecture of the fund, but it requires a lot of money in there. So you need the whole of society to come together and work for the process. So I have some future things, present things, and midterm things.
This is one of the funds that it's, if I understood it right, is going to contribute to get closer to that 1.3. It's really good. Do you feel that COP30 will try to say, okay, we've landed somewhere between 300 and 1.3 at this moment in time, and what is your hope of how close do we get there? I know you don't have, you know, you don't have that bubble, but, you know, is this something where we're going to be very far, somewhat close, or, you know, and I know you can't guess, but where's your feeling?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I know. I think there are three big financial stories at COP30. One is the delivery of the roadmap. So to your question, Brazil, along with the presidency of COP29, they will deliver an effective roadmap after consultation with a lot of people saying, this is how we move from 300 billion to 1.3 trillion. So they will show this roadmap. TFFF is a sort of a parallel that adds in there, but it's being developed in parallel. And it's supposed to be launched at COP30. That's our expectation, effectively launched with money in there to get going in the day after. The third one is carbon credit, which, as I mentioned before, it's a very sophisticated theme that Brazil and many other countries are saying we need to continue to work dearly on this, because this, at the end of the day, not only is part of the 1.3 trillion at some point in time, but is the most fluid market-driven mechanism that we will have in the future. But for it to be effective, we need a lot of countries in there, and we need regulation to look alike. So as an example, Brazil just enacted its legislation last year. The regulation of the legislation has not come out yet. It's supposed to come now before COP. Then we need to look at this piece of law and regulation is that this needs to talk to other countries, to other regions, because then we can buy and sell these credits with the best economic sense, the best mechanism for investors, for the businesses that need to develop projects that require carbon credits and so forth. So those are the three financial topics that will mostly be talked at COP30 for the benefit of the agenda.
Great. So we'll have a roadmap, which is amazing. We're going to enhance, it seems, the carbon markets, which is basically taking already the success of COP29 and moving it forward. And there's going to be something around this TFF, which I'm not sure. Do you know what it stands for?
It's Tropical Forest Fund Forever. This is a fund where a lot of money will be there, and it will invest as a normal fund, as a 401k, any fund. And then the hurdle rate will be given back to the investors, and they will allow an excess on the hurdle rate to be given to the countries that have tropical forests standing up. And there are 70 countries around the world with those forests. This amount, if we get to the peak of the fund, which is at $125 billion, you could get around $3 to $4 billion to be contributed to this yearly scheme, which you will be calculating for each country if they kept, if they enhanced, or if they lost forest. And due to that, they will be in or out of the process. And even nicer in this system, 20% of this excess proceed that goes to the country has to be at least 20%. On the communities surrounding the forest, because today you have this very negative situation, not only in Brazil, but elsewhere, where forests, which are the most valuable assets in the world, have the poorest people around them. So how can you do an organized system where keeping up the forest is a way of living? And that's what TFF could be supportive. And this facility is supposed to last from 30 to 40 years, is still being finalized. So you would have a very good visibility, and the investors are putting their money on a normal facility. So very good risk profile, very, very different and pragmatic way of tackling the problem of forest.
That's fantastic. Funding. And it's interesting that's going to happen in Belém. So you kind of in the right context for that sort of discussion. And look, we hear a lot about this COP30 action agenda. What is it and how is it going to make the COP different? Is it already part of what we just discussed?
The Brazilian presidency, talking to the champions, talking to United Nations, talking to the Marrakesh partnership, where you have a lot of the entities of the climate around the world, they came to some principles that we wanted to talk about implementation, that we wanted to have one only agenda, not multiple agendas, and that we wanted to be connected to the so-called global stocktake, which is the route for delivery that the countries are supposed to do. So regardless of geopolitics, everything that is in the action agenda has been approved 10 years ago by all of these countries. So that was part of the idea. Let's do something that is you cannot challenge because everybody's in and has been in there for a long period of time. From there, we came up with six axes that organize 30 key objectives. In those objectives, we invited all of the existing initiatives around the world to join. Important point I didn't mention in the beginning. We said no new initiatives, no new pledges. So Brazil, through the COP30 cycle, is not proposing anything new. We're just working on existing ideas. Those initiatives were made by eventually people like you or people like me in any organization over time. So we mapped 600 existing initiatives. 300 of them are more active than the other 300. So we brought those 300 in and we created 30 activation groups. So each key objective has an activation group. Within this activation group, the owners of the initiatives are invited to sit in there and to guide the proceed of this initiative. And then we have three basic outcomes intended. One is to have a very good mapping for each of the initiatives with key objectives, time frame, responsibles. So a lot of visibility for each initiative better than today. Second, a so-called granary of solutions, which is already out there, is public. So those solutions are coming up and are being showcased to everyone in the world to find resources. You're going to talk about investors so that the investors know where to invest. Guys that don't know how to do what they want to do could see examples and follow. And the third big product, it's a plan to accelerate the solution. So let's go back to one of the examples, sustainable aviation fuel. We need to accelerate. So can we sit as a group of all the related people and try to accelerate that solution using the COP cycle, the COP headlight, to attract everyone that we need to attract, government, non-government, etc. So those are the objectives. And finally, when we draw this architecture, it took some time. We said, let's not think only about COP30. Let's think about a continuous effort. So we cannot leave Belém in November 22nd.
Yeah, close to my birthday.
There you go. So we leave Belém on that Sunday and then we stop working. No. So we thought about this activation group process as a way to continue to work. And of course, once we have the new presidency of the next COP, we invite them, show what we are doing, see if they like, transmit to them. And of course, you have all the adaptations and adjustments that need to be made in any process over time. But I think we have somehow a robust idea on how to work 365 days per year on the problem.
I didn't realize that Brazil was basically not making any commitments. That sounds quite a unique way to go in. And given the world we're in, it probably is one of the ways to try to come out of COP with some success that is actually concrete and at hand. I wanted to pick up something you mentioned earlier, which was you mentioned adaptation. But we spoke about mainly aspects that have to do with mitigation and transition. Do you feel, you know, this COP is mainly about mitigation, you know, or is it mainly about adaptation and resilience?
We decided early on also between presidency, us and everyone else, that adaptation needs to be at the same level as mitigation. Sometimes mitigation looks easier because it's more tangible in some ways, but it doesn't work because we know that the climate change is going on and a lot of people are being affected. My hometown in Brazil, Porto Alegre, was underwater last year for more than a month, but around 1 million people having to move out of the city for lack of energy, water, and any condition to be in the city for a quite long period of time. So we need to work on those things in simultaneous with the same effort. So out of this six axes that I mentioned, where we centralize the action agenda, two of them are clearly adaptation and resilience. One of them is enabling factors for anything. So it's finance, technology, capacity building. And three of them are mostly mitigation, but they also cross in some ways with adaptation. So I think we have a good blend. And the idea is to, of course, give as much space to one thing or the other because they need to go along. And by the way, in some of the key objectives, they are mixed. You have some circumstances where the two are simultaneous.
Again, try to think of the institutional investors. So I think now we know more or less what are the goals and how you're planning to have them achieved. But as investors, do you see that they should physically participate to this event? Do you welcome investors in Belém? And do you think that they should overcome their challenges that are probably both political in their own countries as well as logistical in terms of what's expected on the ground in Brazil? And if so, really, what are some practical recommendations?
Well, first, I think it is very important to participate one way or another. I would love to have everybody in Belém and everybody in Brazil in the days before COP as well, because there are many events going on in the country. But of course, we need to recognize the issues of each one, logistics, budget, and agenda flexibility. But there are many ways to participate. But the relevant thing is that as I go around the world, there was clearly a lack of connection when we talk about investors. You have a lot of great projects that are not finding financing and or investment. And you have a lot of investors saying, gee, I have a lot of money committed and I cannot find a project. So this is an area that we can do better. And this showcasing, the granary of solutions, the plan of acceleration of solutions, clearly, they are easier, maybe, that's what we're trying to do, for investors to look there and say, you know, I'm interested in sector X, sector Z. I like green steel. Wow, now there is a group that talks about green steel every day, which has everybody around the table, so I can find there whatever I need. That's what we're trying to do. I think would be very good for anyone to be in Brazil over this next few weeks as we go through the COP cycle, because it's a COP of implementation, of showcasing. So for an investor, this is very important. And I'm not taking the relevance of the negotiation. Negotiation was so important. But as you started this conversation correctly, this is a political moment where maybe negotiation is not going to be the star of the party. Maybe the star of the party is action, implementation, showcasing. And if that is the case for businesses, for investors, for mayors, for academia, it is very interesting to see things on the ground. And one interesting point for having the COP in Brazil, you have many solutions that can be applied in this specific country. So you can showcase and you have scale. So sometimes you talk about a solution, but it's not appropriate for the country that is hosting COP, or there is no scale to make the economic case. I don't know of any case that would occur here. Anything that we think about on the climate action agenda, Brazil is part of it with scale, either in the good stuff or in the very negative stuff in terms of population, huge cities being exposed to problems. So it's very interesting from this standpoint as well.
So come to Brazil to find deals at scale. That seems to be.
Yeah.
Now, if you have to be make a choice, do you come the week before in Sao Paulo to PRI in person and where all the investors are going to be? Or do you hold and go to Belém and join the conversation there?
I would do both, honestly. And I would add Rio de Janeiro. I think the beginning of the week before in Rio is also very interesting. So I think around 3 and 4, maybe 5 of November, there's many events, either in Sao Paulo and in Rio. So dividing a bit among both. And then Belém, I think, will be very, very important as well. But of course, each one knows its budget, its capability. I'll be there.
You'll be there. But you know, push comes to shove. You don't have, okay, you really need to do that day.
I think if you have to make an option, I think Belém should be your option, if it's a single option. But considering investors and more, let's say, people that can afford, I think it's worth both.
I'm curious to understand your view as a business person about the role of AI and tech. Is technology and AI going to help climate champions advance the agenda of climate? Or, given some of the risks that AI, for example, in data centers have, provide a negative impact?
Well, I tend to think that anything that will foster productivity, efficiency, business growth, at the end of the day, should be positive. We need to make it positive. Because if we let those things go, we will have a return on socioeconomic development, flashback. You're going to go backwards in what is very much needed by all of us, especially by the population that is still coming up in terms of socioeconomic development in places like Brazil, Africa, Asia, and so forth. Now, you need to bring the sustainability part of it. AI, data centers, this is the most energy demanding sector in the world right now. But is this a problem? Is this necessarily a problem? Maybe not. Maybe it's part of the solution. Because again, we go back to scale. So imagine this amazing increase of grids, storage, renewable capabilities that you could have to face that. That's part of the solution. You're going to bring those implementations to higher scale, less cost, more affordable to everyone. And by the way, I think we are seeing somehow part of this, at least in countries like Brazil, in countries like US, where the curve is very steep, but is very much focused on renewable. If we would have the kind of circumstance that we are having on the AI data center front, in some of the hard-to-abate sectors, this steep curve, the offtake agreements would be much easier. The supply-demand challenges would be fixed much sooner. So personally, I think it's positive as long as we need how to deal with it. And I think we know as overall society.
And, you know, a lot of the COP, in this COP30 is about, you know, empowering more emerging markets and developed markets. Is AI and technology supportive in that? And I believe there's even an initiative that is about capacity building transfer. How much is COP30 going to try to leverage on that?
Well, we need to find some focus, of course, but I think you're touching on the problem that maybe goes beyond COP, which is what happens if this is so central to any kind of socioeconomic dominance, and this is very much into one place and not spread well enough into other places, what kind of gap of socioeconomic development it could have at the end of the day. And I agree with that. But some way we should now bring into COP, if we can use some of the attributes, I'll give you a practical example. Brazil maybe is not on the forefront of AI development, but maybe Brazil, as some other countries, is the best place in the world to build data infrastructure because of very high availability of renewables, availability of water, and some of the essential inputs for that. So that's an amazing opportunity. So maybe that's where countries like Brazil need to put a lot of effort. So what if I attract this amazing amount of assets and I get into this system one way or another? What do I do from there? I'm a very practical, pragmatic person. I think you have ways to browse.
Going forward after COP30, what is your hope after that? You know, and maybe is there something around climate emissions? Is there something around multilateralism that you think will come out of that positively?
Oh, my sincere hope is that the architecture that we build, not as it is, but this idea, this principle will last. Because having worked on this process a lot over the last 4 or 5 months, my feeling is that if we have this engine going and it doesn't stop or it doesn't change dramatically from one day to the other, the efficiency, the results will be much, much quicker, much better. Scale will be achieved sooner than later. So that would be my number one expectation, that the architecture, that the framework of a unified, hands-on, practical action agenda survives and moves forward. And honestly, I have all the reasons to believe that this will be the case from what we are hearing from the parties, from the companies, from the investors, from the entities. This idea of continuation is very, very important, I think, to everyone.
Amazing. Look, we often ask guests to share a piece of art of any kind that links a bit to their sustainability experience or to their COP. In other words, a bit to the focus of what the show is. Have you thought of anything, and will you like to share?
Bob, I'm a big art fan. My wife is an artist, and her paintings, her etchings, effectively, are here in the back. But I'm a music person, theater. So, and for me, this all goes to sustainability, because if we have no art, I think we'll be in trouble sustaining ourselves and the world over time. So I would bring all of it to the table, but today, preference to my wife's etchings here in the back.
Amazing. What do they represent?
It's all abstract. I keep asking, but I don't get the answer. So I will proceed with that question as well.
Amazing. If you like, you can tell us a little bit more. We'll add it to the show notes so she can share what she's doing to the broader community. I'm going to shift to just the section about a few quick fire questions where we'll ask you some quick reflection on a few points. So the first thing is climate progress. Is this a multilateral turtle or a national rabbit or hare?
I think none. Neither, maybe that's the right English word. If it's one or the other, we would be in trouble. We need to get better either way.
Okay. And 1.5 degrees target, is it an achievable reality or is it fading dream?
I think it is. I think it is. We have a lot of solutions. We have a lot of technologies. Question for me is timing. We will get there. Question is when.
And now, innovation or regulation? Which will get us further and faster?
Innovation, probably faster. But alone, it doesn't work. We need both.
We haven't talked about it, but in COP30, a lot are mentioning this Mochi Rao, which is about urgency and collaboration. But there's also a lot of Feijoada, which is about doing things together, but slowly. So is it going to be a Feijoada, really?
I think the doing together is fundamental. This is a collective effort. If there is leakage, as I mentioned before, in the process, it doesn't work. We need to all work together. And by the way, none of us have all the solution, all the technology, all the scale. It is a collective effort. I think the carbon credit story shows that. It's a global story to work, to be effective. Now, it cannot be very slow. If it is very slow, then eventually we get to the objective too late.
And it'd be tough, but if you have to pick one single win out of COP30.
It's the one I mentioned to you before. Continuation, not for COP30, for the process overall. Continuation of the climate action agenda.
Maybe similarly, but what is COP30 in a single word?
Implementation.
I think COP has been kind of this toy that we've been winding up and getting energized for 30 years. And now it seems that you guys want to put it on the ground and let it go and kind of get the implementation going. So that's, to me, my takeaway. Let's make sure that this rabbit or whatever it is can actually run around and overcome quite a lot of gaps and challenges. I think I heard Anatoni once say, you know, let's go from promise to practice. That seems exactly what you're kind of talking about. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time. I know you're super busy. I really look forward to seeing you in Brazil, certainly a PRI in person. And if I get convinced from your talk, even in Belém. And thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
For all of you, if you like the episode, please like, subscribe, and comment. And we do hope to see you in the next show. And until then, stay wild.